Hey everybody, thanks for coming along today. My name's Jordan and this is a Windows Phone session, WPH222. It was in the guide as a level 300 session and I've dropped it to level 200 because it's sort of halfway between 200 and 300, so it's about a 250 I reckon. Before we get started, I just wanted to draw attention to what you see on the screen. Dave Glover, put your hand up down the back there. Dave's a local DPE here in Australia, is in charge of Windows Phone evangelism, and he's gone ahead and set up a community site that you can head over, and I encourage you to head over there and register. Registration benefits are you can actually get a free Windows Phone Marketplace token. So without a token, without a Marketplace account, you're unable to actually publish to the Windows Phone Marketplace. And that's worth about $99 a year, so that's pretty cool. You also get early notification of events and events, workshops, and competitions. And if you're doing some Windows Phone development but don't actually have access to a physical device, it's encouraged that you do test your apps on a real device before you publish to the store. You can contact Dave through the site and he can arrange a loan device for you, which is pretty cool. Now, I'm actually pretty excited today. I've got a Windows Phone device to give away in this session. It's a Nokia Lumia 710. It's sitting right here, so you can walk out with it today. And all you have to do is ask the best question. So we're trying to encourage the phone sessions this year to have, you know, a bit of interactivity, get people to ask questions as we're going along. There's two ways to do that. Jump on Twitter and use those 57 hashtags. And I'd like for you to also include my name so that way I'll make sure that I see the question pop up on my phone. Or we can do it the old-fashioned way and you can just yell them at me as we're going along. Do encourage you to ask questions on the way through. I'd much rather answer a question in context than sort of, you know, backtrack at the end. So let's do that. Oh, it works. Look at that. So my name's Jordan. Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming to my session. I'm the solution architect at a company that I run called Xamling, and I run that with my two brothers, so it's a family business, and we've been around for a couple of years now. So grab me at xamling.net or on Twitter at jackedge. Got some stuff to throw up at the end of the session for more contact details. I'm a Silverlight MVP for the last 3 years running, so that's handy today, considering that Windows Phone development's all done with Silverlight. So, that's progressed sort of, I guess, from being an original Silverlight on the desktop MVP, and I guess it's sort of flowing through onto the phone and now Windows 8 as well. Now, I just wanted to give you a bit of a background about Xamling and sort of what we do and who we are to give you an idea of where my experience comes from today. Basically, Xamling's what you'd call a consumer-focused development company. So we develop for consumers as opposed to enterprise or business customers. We develop for those customers, but the actual end-user target would be a consumer. So I like to think of consumer-based applications as applications that people actually want to use. They're not forced to use them. So they choose to use them in their own time. That comes with a lot of challenges because unlike enterprise applications, you actually have to make consumer-focused applications good. And we've been around for a couple of years now. We actually started development on Windows Phone during the early betas, so way before they were released to the public. So we actually had to have two apps finished, the Foxtel app and the Telstra app here, finished about a month before the phone was ever first released. This is the very first version. So we actually worked along with the team and everything like that, the Windows Phone team, through all the betas, right up to release. So those two applications are built into every Telstra Windows phone that you get. And a few of you in the room may have that on your phone already. And so our experience has gone from the early betas right through to the release of version 1 of Windows Phone 7 to 7.1 and so on and right up until today. And so what this session is, it's not so much a 101. It's not like, here's how you set up a Windows Phone project, here's how you do some XAML, here's how you get, you know, populate a text box and things like that. It's more like you've been playing around with the platform and you've either started building a serious app or you're thinking about building a serious app. And what I want to talk about today is some of the questions that I find come up after you start getting serious about building an application. So you've sort of done the SDK examples and you're starting to build a real app. You've got some network connections to worry about. You've got all this, you know, proper, I guess you're starting to lean towards production code. And you start running into real-world issues. So I want to show some of the real-world issues that I've run into over the last couple of years and some of the things that I want to talk about today I've run into recently. And so I get a lot of questions repeated to me over the years, and I just wanted to address those. Not just issues, though. I want to show you a couple of cool things that platform can do that might not be immediately obvious, and also how to get the most out of some of the things that are in there that you might have seen floating around. So, I'm going to skip a lot of the basics, but, you know, if I'm moving too fast, then please do stop me and ask a question, any questions. Every question asked gets a USB key. Any questions? No. That's a statement. So remember, that phone's up for grabs, so be smart about it. I think Dave's going to choose who wins down at the end. But you'll get it. You'll automatically get a USB key for every question. He'll just walk down and give it to you. So just very, very quickly, I just want to blast through how you actually get up and running on the phone platform. So you'll need Visual Studio 2010, not supported in 2012 just yet. That's still true, Dave? So basically, rather than give you a whole bunch of URLs, just go and search for Windows Phone 7 SDK and it'll take you to the Windows Phone site. And there's two downloads. So install 7.1 first, then the 7.1.1 update. And 7.1.1 update adds support for Windows 8 and some other stuff that I'll actually draw attention to a bit later. If you are on Windows 8 and you're installing, you might actually see the installer throw an error at the end. Now, it did install properly, just you won't get any XNA DirectX development stuff. So you can go and install the Games Windows Marketplace client first, and then install the 7.1 and then the 7.1.1, and then you won't get that error during download. Not on Windows Phone 7.1. Yep, that's a question. We're moving. All right, so as I said, let's pretend we're working on our first Windows Phone 7 app. We're starting to take the platform a bit seriously, and everything's great until we start to get a little bit more advanced. So, and just a reminder again that we do have that string of hashtags down the bottom. And I've got no questions, but someone followed me on Twitter. Maybe give them a key. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to jump straight into it. The first thing that I find when working on Windows Phone 7 is networking. So, and it's usually the first thing that you attempt when you're building a production app. You need to get some things in and out of your device and show it on the device. So, okie dokie. All right, so what I've actually gone and done is I've built this Windows Phone app, and I've basically already got it, so then it's downloading some information from the service, from a web service. For the exercise today, we're going to pretend that I don't know who wrote the web service. I've just been tasked with consuming it. So I don't have the code for it. I maybe have a little bit of documentation, but the idea is that I'm sort of left on my own. I've got to go and figure this out for myself. For the sake of today, I'm just pretending that I've just done a get latest, so someone else has been working on the project as well. And basically, I've just done a get latest, and I'm running up my app. Did that just hit a breakpoint? There we go. I've just totally spoiled the rest of my app. I've given it all away by hitting that breakpoint. It's all over. I'm getting some data out of my server, and you can see they've got three records coming down. This is just a list of people. Free USB key to whoever gets the reference of the last two names. Come and see me after everybody, because there is a show that you need to watch and that you obviously haven't. It's called Frisky Dingo. Absolutely hilarious. No USB keys for you. So I've got this service, and someone's complained to me it's not working, and I'm like, great, that'll be up to me, because that's the sort of thing that I like to do. I love debugging service calls. And so I've just done a get latest, and I'm like starting to click around on the button. It's like, well, it's certainly not working. And I've actually just, when it was running up, I saw a couple of red bits up here. And this, I guess, is my first little tip for you guys. You'll notice that it's actually gone red on a binding path expression error. Now, normally, when you're doing development, it can be sometimes pretty easily, especially when you've got multiple people working on a project, to actually screw up a binding, because they are just free-form text. So, and in this case, it's gone, I can't find what you were trying to data bind to. And so what I've actually done is I've actually installed a little Visual Studio plugin called VS Color Output. And now whenever anything goes wrong in my project, straight after a get latest or something like that, I can see them fly up the screen, and it really draws attention to that. So first up, I've obviously got a broken binding, which will happen. And there it is there. It looks like someone's accidentally typed half a message into the end of the code, which, hands up if you've ever sort of been typing away and then sort of typed in a message and your whole message went into your code. Yeah, that's everybody. We don't have enough USB keys for that. Okay, so we've got this call, and I'm just going to put a breakpoint in here so that way we can sort of see what's going on. I'm going to start debugging my own code, and I'll run through it as I do it. I'm not online, so my TFS is going to crack it. I actually really did just do a get latest. I wasn't lying. So I've got add person, and all right, so it's working now. So thank God we fixed the binding. There's no more red coming through, or maybe a little bit less. There's a bit of red that you might see that's loading up every time I run the project. I've got no idea what's causing that. And so, yeah, I've gone in and I've already done all the stuff to go and create the user, but for whatever reason, when I'm actually running it, I'm getting a lot of red. I'm like, what's going on there? So let's just attempt to do that again, and we'll step through a little bit. And so I've got this, you know, the actual code that I'm running here, I can give to you guys after the session if you want to see how I do service calls and things like that, but it's sort of outside the scope to talk about it too much here. But just suffice it to say, it's downloading a piece of JSON off a web server and then deserializing it into an object. This is why it's not level 200, it's level 250, because I said deserialization. So I'm stepping through and I'm like hitting this web exception. So let's go and have a look. The problem is with Windows Phone is that because it's such a compact platform, you don't actually get a lot of information coming up out of the networking stack into your development environment. So I can see that there's been, something's gone on. I can see what I've actually tried to hit here. But it's, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. So what I might just do is I'll copy the value of that and I'll paste it over here so I can see what's going on. All right. So let's just run up Internet Explorer and see if we can get anything out of this guy. Take a sample. I know the username and password. Okay. All right. So something is coming down. I can actually see here I am getting some JSON data out of the service when I do a get. So that bit's working. Where it's failing is when I'm trying to actually send some information up to the service, which is what we want to debug. Now, just quickly, another little tip is that if you guys are working with a service and you can download the service and then you've got to sort of reverse engineer what's coming out of the service to create your project and do some, you know, like some entities or something like that, just go off and just search for JSON to C#, and grab that JSON there and just whack it in. And I'll actually go and create an entity for you. Now, in this example, it's a pretty simple example, obviously. I just said example twice. In this example, it's a pretty simple example. But on a more advanced web service, you'll actually, you know, you could spend hours trying to figure out what the data types are and everything like that. It will do ints, it will do all those other ones and everything like that. In this case, I've just got the usuals. And when I've actually banged it into my application, I've gone ahead and just changed one thing. Just the GUID to ID to GUID. But you know, that doesn't really help me. I know that bit's working, but the rest of it isn't. So what I actually might do is I might actually fire up Fiddler. So there's an application, you can search for it. So, hands up if you've used Fiddler. So I might just skip this section. No, I'm kidding. So what actually happens is Fiddler, when Windows Phone tools first came out, there was no way to debug the Windows Phone application. So in the last few releases, you can actually go through and debug from the Windows Phone emulator. The reason why it didn't work is because the Windows Phone emulator is actually a different machine. It's actually a virtual machine running on your PC. So if you're trying to get to localhost on your emulator, it's not localhost of the host machine that's running it. It actually is a different computer. So you can imagine it's a little bit difficult to route the requests off that machine and into Fiddler. The beauty of Fiddler is that we can actually run shoot. Okay, so basically the beauty with Fiddler is we can actually tell it to go and route all requests through itself. And this goes and forces system-wide for all things to run through Fiddler, and including the Windows Phone. I did not expect to have anywhere near this resolution. Anyway, basically, yeah, you search for Windows Phone 7, Fiddler, blah, 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 you'll find the thing. But basically, I'm just setting a preference that says use Fiddler, so I'll do that. I actually have to restart Fiddler, but basically, one other little thing just before I do, got to make sure that this allow remote computers to connect box is ticked. Because it is a remote computer. So restart Fiddler, restart the emulator, Fiddler, and just reboot this guy. Oh, wonderful, it's doing a complete one. And with any luck, this usually just takes a second. I don't know why it's doing a full reboot. Somehow the Windows Phone emulator 7.1.1 has got this new feature that knows when you're on stage. And it seems to slow down a little bit. So the idea being is that we can now jump into Fiddler and see what's going on in a moment. Somebody ask a question, please. No, so it doesn't have a setting for it. Well, maybe it does for Wi-Fi. I can't remember. No. So I've gone to add person. I'm just going to clear my breakpoint there and run him up. And still failing. That's okay, because we haven't fixed anything yet. But I can see it's actually shown up in Fiddler as a little red line. Now, if I double-click that and click on the raw view, I can actually see what's exactly come out of the service. And I'm like, So what have I sent? I've sent up first name Noob, last name McGillicuddy, Noob McGillicuddy, and sex is S. I have not ever seen one of those. So, and it goes, S is not a valid human sex. Please choose between standard and male sex. Thank you very much. And, all right, so it's pretty good error come out. And like, I actually think I might want to go and test that. So I'll right-click on the actual request that failed, and I'll go reissue from the composer. And I can see in here that I can just go into there and just change it to M, give it a shot, see what happens. I see a new request pop up. And this time I can actually see that, hey, it's worked. It's come back. I can see it's given an ID. And given that it's a RESTful service, it's also given me the location that it created it at, up here in the location field. So I can see that request has gone through. So basically, I go back into my application. And, oops, I need a view model here somewhere. There it is. Into my application. And, well, look, there's the problem right there. M. Okay. Just another little tip. Oh, I assume that's working, by the way. No red stuff. I am a developer. There is no messaging in this application whatsoever. So if it doesn't work, you know. But if it does, well. Oh, yeah, just another little tip for you guys. So if you're working on a project where you do have access to the service and it's actually in the same project, you can actually run up your phone project and your Zoom in. I actually practiced at 1080 by 1024, and this year they've upgraded. It's running at like full HD. It's running out of HDMI. So let's do that. Here's a little tip for you. You can change your font size in Visual Studio. How's that? Good enough? More? No? All right, cool. So you can run multiple startup projects. And basically, it'll run your ASP.NET and your phone project at the same time, and you can debug them both. So that's pretty cool. Okay. All right, so just quickly to recap there. Everybody in the room's used Fiddler. Hopefully you're just that little bit better at it now. go across to fiddler2.com, and then if there's that piece of code you need to run, just press fiddler set network proxy blah 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 host name, or just search for it, and make sure, yeah, just remember to use the remote host connections in Fiddler, or else it won't allow it. And just to call out, remember that localhost on the emulator is not your machine, which is a very common issue, because quite often when you press F5 in an ASP.NET web service, something comes up as localhost and you think, I'll copy that into my phone app, and it just doesn't work. And that VS, just search for VS Color Output to install that thing that puts the output window into colors. It does green and blue and red and all sorts of other colors. It's quite wonderful. That was a recent discovery of mine, actually. Okay, background agents or scheduled tasks. Yo. Oh. Oh, there. Hey.
Adapting local host in the emulator.
Yeah.
So if you want your Windows phone app to point to a local host web service, do you have to specify an actual IP address?
Yeah, or host name. So the idea being is that you might want to run it in full IIS to enable external access to the site. Yeah. Yep. The actual phone does use the networking stack of the host computer, the emulator, but it's sort of all funny the way it works. So just localhost probably won't work most of the time. Okay, so something else that I just wanted to talk about today is background agents or scheduled tasks on the Windows phone. So basically, I think the idea with background agents and scheduled tasks, they are the same thing, sorry, is that Windows Phone's got heaps of cool new features like live tiles and all sorts of notifications you can do, and you can pin multiple tiles and do all this sort of stuff. To get the most out of it, you either want to do some sort of push notification down the phone when something updates, but remember today we don't actually know who wrote the web service, and we don't want to have to do any of that sort of thing. So with a background agent, you can actually go ahead and write a piece of code that polls the server instead, and it runs about every 30 minutes or so, and then you can update your live tiles and the client side without having to modify the service and do various other things. You can update the phone's location to the service and things like that in case you want to track your ex or something like that. And you can also tell the user when things happen, and they're actually really simple to write. So without modifying a web service, you can go and have this great live tile application. And so let's talk about background agents. They should be called scheduled tasks, but for whatever reason I didn't call it that in this. And we're going to talk about some other stuff along the way as well. So basically, background agent, file, new, project. And we've got the Silverlight for Windows Phone, and down there you've got the scheduled task agent. So, you just click new scheduled task agent, adds a new project to your solution, and in there, here's one I prepared earlier. In there, so I've just called it phonecomplete.background, and it creates this scheduled agent file. Most of it you don't have to worry about what it's doing, except right down the bottom here. And it just gets invoked every time the background agent runs at 30 minutes. Basically, you have to run that once, and then the background agent will continue to function unless a series of problems or other issues impact, which I'll talk about in a minute. Then once you've got your background agent in, you just go and call a piece of code to go and do stuff. It's really, really simple. That's pretty much it, except for all this stuff that I'm about to show you. I mentioned that when you start up your application, you have to start the background agent, and you actually have to do that every time, just in case. So what we've got is we've got this background agent helper that I call every single time the application boots. It's just got a static method there called start. And basically what it's doing, it's going through and it's finding the periodic task name. I've just called it that. You can call it anything you want. It doesn't matter what name it is. And then I check to see if it exists and I remove it first. And then I go and actually create it and I give it a description. And then tell it to add it. So scheduled action service.add task. I don't tell it to start, I just tell it to add. Now, that description there, what it's actually doing is, if I go across to settings in the emulator, I might just see if I can make him a bit bigger. Nope. And then I scroll across and I go to applications, background task, and see there's my phone complete background task there. And you'll see here's that little description there. I was typing in a description for years and didn't know where it was showing up. But so it actually gets integrated into the operating system. So make it something that means something. And in this case, the ticket sample agent does absolutely nothing. While I'm in the settings, I just wanted to call out a couple of things that I find I discover too late in the project and it's really hard to fix. So you remember what my application looked like. Windows Phone, you can have a light theme and a dark theme depending on, you know, what your preferences are. So I've gone to the light theme now, and I'm just going to go back and run up my app again. And so it's hugely important that you test all the themes on your application and don't do it right at the end. Even if you've got an application, like a lot of our clients, they've got a lot of branding and things, so we don't often use the light and dark theme. But even though we think we've got it great, we run it up in the light theme and something will be off, like some text, it'll be white text on a white background or something. Yes, you can detect. Sorry, the question was, can you adjust using code based on the theme? Yes, you can detect what theme is running. No, it is not a good idea. USB key. Oh, hang on, I've got some up here. You've already got one. You don't want two? All right, take one home for your dog. Oh, sorry, question. That is absolutely okay. As I was just saying, though, even if you do that and you remove all the theming stuff, sometimes stuff slips through the cracks, so do test it anyway. We've run into that problem a couple of times. Yes, sir?
Periodic task time, does that have to be globally unique or just unique in
your... Don't know. I assume it does. Yep. I usually put the product name in there and things like that. Another question. Yes.
Does it actually have to be a task that is scheduled to run, say, every 30 minutes, or could you say hook it up to like web sockets?
No. So it doesn't run permanently in the background. So it'll only run it is scheduled. Yes.
So say if you wanted to update your live tile using web sockets, are you able to?
You wouldn't do web sockets. You'd use push notification instead. Yep. No, it'll just run whenever it wants, unless. So basically, I'm adding the scheduled task, and you see here, I'm actually doing a whole heap of catches because there's a lot of things that can go wrong when you add a background task. The user's actually disabled all background tasks, or they've disabled the background task for your application. The phone, depending on the amount of memory it has, will allow an X amount of scheduled tasks. That's not a fixed number, I don't think. I think it's just how many fill it up. So it's usually... Usually five or six are allowed to run or something like that, maybe a couple more. But you never really know. So it can fail for that reason. And, of course, it can just fail for no reason, which I don't often see. Now, it is a scheduled task, and it does run basically whenever it feels like in the background, roughly every 30 minutes, depending on what the other scheduled tasks are doing. Make sure you keep the task short. If it goes over 30 seconds or something like that, it will get killed. If it gets killed twice, it will get removed. So... it means that it's being naughty and it gets sent to the naughty corner. If you want to test the task, now this line right in the middle, this guy here, what this is doing is that it's going, if it's using compiler directive, if I'm in debug mode, I want to run that task. So as soon as I press F5 on my application, I want to run up the background task. Now if I actually switch between debug and release, you'll see that that gets greyed out and anything that's not going to run at release mode gets greyed out, so I actually won't even be able to set a breakpoint there. So it won't do it if I'm in release, but now it will. So, and this is where the whole presentation got spoiled before, because I was going to set a breakpoint and show you guys it hitting it, but it's already been done. We'll do it anyway. Okay, so application starts up. We just wait a few seconds. I told it to start after 5. As I said, background agents, they don't do what nobody tell them. It's going to run whenever it feels like, around 5 seconds. There we go. So it's actually hit it, and we can jump through and we can debug and everything like that. As you can see, it is doing absolutely nothing at this point. So it's actually I'd actually like to call out that it is doing absolutely nothing. Because there's actually some rules on what you're allowed to do in your background agent. Now, and quite often you'll upload to the store and it will fail straight away, like within 20 minutes without any human looking at it. And now the problem is that if I click on phone complete, go project, there's this marketplace test kit now, and this is one of the additions in 7.1.1. So I click on that guy, and it's got all this cool stuff you can do. You can go through it, but the main, most important one is automated tests. So I click on run tests. Oh, sorry, you have to build in release mode. So go build, run tests. And I can actually see I've just failed on a capability validation. Apologies if you can't see this down the back. I can't figure out how to do zooming on Windows 8. Ignore the bottom two, because that iconography and everything, you actually do that as part of the store upload process anyway. You can do it at this point, but you do it as part of the store upload process, and that satisfies that. But the main one is this capability validation, and it's saying unsupported API cannot be used by background agent assembly phone complete data, which is what I'm actually calling my background agent do something code is in. But I go and have a look at my background agent, it's actually not doing anything. It's not a very well-named method. So, but I can see here it's actually using, that's trying to create a shell tile. So the idea is in background agents, there's a bunch of rules, I said. You can update a shell tile, but you are not allowed to create one. That must be done by user action. So I just start trawling through, and I actually notice, oh, I've actually accidentally used a DLL that has the ability to call a shell tile create a secondary live tile for a phone app, but I'm actually not using that piece of code directly here. I might be using it from somewhere else in the application. So the idea is that you need to have in your mind the set of rules for background agents, look them up, and make sure that your shared DLLs don't use any of that stuff. It's a common thing to have a data DLL or an infrastructure DLL that accesses a database and has helper classes in it to create shell tiles. It's a real pain in the bottom to go and separate those later when you want a background task to access data but not have this. See? Okay, so rebuild this bad boy and... Oops, got to click the project. Remember to click the project. It won't show up. Open Marketplace Ticket. And I've passed the capability validation. So whew, we're ready to go. This application is going to be awesome. Okay. So that's a couple of things. I find that when people first start up the development, a couple of things that they need to do. Bit of debugging, bit of creation. Yeah, so you can have shared DLLs, no problems. Just don't have the shell tile helpers and a couple of other things in that DLL. Have that in another DLL again, and don't reference it from your background agent. So you can certainly do shared code. You just have to be careful about those couple of things. Yep. So the idea being is that as you're adding things, just keep running that marketplace test kit.
What was the reason for removing and re-adding the background agent?
Oh, because basically I need to make sure that it's getting started, because it could have been cancelled by failing. It could have been removed by the user. So the catches make sure that I'm not forcing it on them, but if it's failed twice in a row, or I think it's twice in a row, it would have been automatically removed by the system. I want to make sure that it's re-added. Yep. Okay. Another question. So updating live tiles is a good one. You are, but you might not have access to a service layer. So if it was me, I would do whatever I could to get in to have no background agent and push things down. Other things you can do is you can update the location of the user to the server and then do a push based on things that are around them. Yes? So the applications can do that, but they have to be running.
So can that run as a background task?
No. Oh, it can run in the background, but it has to have been loaded. Yes?
I noticed in the settings of the actual Windows phone, when you actually look at the background task, there's actually an advanced button. And there's a description at the top that says this contains applications that have background tasks that don't and can't be closed manually.
Oh, yep.
And I've noticed that some apps that I install actually end up in there, but I can't actually close them manually. Do you know what that is?
No. I actually don't know why that is. I'm not sure. There's not an option that I know of that you can force it into that spot, although mine's showing up. So it must be that I'm not giving. Must be that my background task just always runs. I don't have an option to turn it off in my app. I don't know how it knows that though.
No, this is actually for all apps that run in background.
Okay.
The previous one is the ones that you can turn off.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I can turn it off there. Cool. Oh, so it may include items. Okay. Cool. Awesome. That wasn't a question. That was a statement. So you don't get a key. May as well have not said anything. So background agent recap. Thanks for the good questions, everybody. Another question. This is nuts. It'll run roughly every 30 minutes. It doesn't go against... That goes against the spirit of a background scheduled task. If you want something continually polling, you need to run your app in the background. But it has to be loaded first. So more resource-intensive application will basically that it needs to be running or running under lock screen or running in the background for the user. So there's a difference between a scheduled task and running an app in the background. So just to call out that you can test them, you can launch for test, and remember to run the marketplace test kit from time to time, and remember to test the colours. Very important one, that. Okay, so we've sort of done a bit of serious stuff. Let's do accelerometer now. And now, the first thing people think when I'm like, accelerometer, they're like, oh, I would never use that in an application. Like, aren't they for playing games, you know, moving the race car around the road? I don't agree with that because I think that a lot of applications can use the accelerometer in a phone. The idea being that you could actually lie your phone face down on the desk and detect when that happens and your application could stop doing something. You could also detect when the user picks it back up. So you can detect shakes and things like that. The problem with the accelerometer, though, is it's actually really hard to debug, especially if you don't have a live device, like a real device. So what I'm going to run through now is a little bit on how to use the accelerometer and also how to debug it and plus some other stuff. So accelerometer, I really actually enjoy the accelerometer. You can do some really fun bits of UI in your application. Yes, sir? No. That's probably one of the things that's banned. So the question was, can the background task make use of the accelerometer? The answer is no, it would be banned. So anything that's really UI focused or creates any UI other than updates it, I would say no. To background, no background for you. Okay, background tasks. Let me just close everything. Zip. So there's this thing in the phone emulator that you can click this little out arrow and it brings up like a whole additional tools window, and it's got things like accelerometer, you can set your location, you can take screenshots, you can do all sorts of cool stuff. For now, let's have a look at the accelerometer. So what I actually want to do is add in some code. So I've got my main page here, and basically it's not doing much at the moment. And I want to just do it, just for this example, I just want to go and make the header move around just a little bit. Okay, so I'm just going to grab some code out here. And excuse me for pasting a whole bunch of junk in, but it's actually not that much code. First up, we've got this the accelerometer class, and that's actually what does the sensor readings. It's got a great name, I think. Accelerometer. And that gives you direct access to the accelerometer sensor. And basically, we go and knew that guy up, so I'm just going to make a call here to init accelerometer, and we go and create a new accelerometer, and then we hook up this event, and so every time the value changes, it's going to fire back the event, and we can read the data, and then I start the guy, I start reading. You can start and stop, so you know depending on what's going on in your application, you could do some stuff. Okay, the event. First of all, the accelerometer is extremely sensitive. I cannot emphasize how touchy it is. So for something like just moving something around the UI, you want to actually, it's going to, like, even just the shake of someone standing there would be detected and be going on the screen. So what you can do is you actually normalize it and tell it to smooth itself out a little bit until the user is doing a sort of like is actually doing a direction or something like that. Like, quite literally, they are sensitive enough that if you put one in your bed, it can tell if you're sleeping or awake. It can tell how you're breathing. It can detect so much stuff. They're so sensitive. And then basically what I'm doing is I'm reading the guy. I'm saying acceleration X and acceleration Z. Now, it's using acceleration, not distance, because it is an accelerometer, not a distanceometer. So what it does is if I flip the phone around this way, it tells me how fast I did that and in what direction, but it doesn't tell me how far, because the accelerometer doesn't really care how far. It just cares how much I do it. Like, it only cares about the force that I'm giving it phone on a certain angle. And then instead of updating the UI yet, I'm actually just storing those values, because the accelerometer fires hundreds of times a second, but my frame rate is only about 30 or 60 frames. So if I try and update the UI too much, it's going to freeze everything out. It's going to be a horrible experience. So what I'm actually doing, I'm just storing them in some variables, and then I'll go through at my own speed and collect those variables and then send them out to the UI. So that's what all that timer junk is there. So timer tick. And basically the timer tick here is just calling itself every few milliseconds instead of hundreds of times a second. And it's going out to the UI and saying, there's a translate transform, we'll have a look in a minute and I'll explain what it is, but basically saying move to here and move to here and times it by three, because the accelerometer measurements are very, very, very small, as I said, so you want to give them a multiplier to actually get them to show up on the screen. Okay, so we'll go in and we'll have a look at what it's actually doing in the main page here. Okay, so this stack panel, this is the guy. So it's the heading area. It's got the title and the subtitle. People, view a list of peeps. We've written up the top. And all I want to do is I want to just be able to move that heading around for absolutely no reason at all. And the stack panel has render transform in it. Now, render transform allows you to take an object, and then in the video card, it actually allows you to move it up and down, zoom it in and out, skew it, make it 3D, do all sorts of cool stuff. So in this case, I'm just using translate, which means offset it, basically. Just offset it by this much and this much, which is so I can tip the phone around. So let's run it. Okay, so the accelerometer, I can just grab the little dot and pretend that I'm tipping the phone and it will start moving the header up and down and left and right, and all over the place. So that was actually pretty easy to do. Now, there's also recorded things, like I can run a pre-recorded shake. So it's just basically going to make sure that if I detect a shake, it's going to do something with the application. You can reset it and everything like that. Now, it brings up an interesting point, because I'm actually just starting to do a little bit of animation in my application, and you can't actually see it here. Does anyone know how to run on Windows 8 the zoom? Awesome. Let's just zoom in over here, please. Okay. Now, I'm actually running up the side of my application. I'm running frame rate counters. Now, they come by default whenever you're running in the emulator or in debug mode on your device. And I'll just very quickly, I've just noticed that the bottom one is going over zero. It's gone up to one. Now, the other ones, they can be important, but at this stage, this one's the most important one to keep an eye on. And if you're just getting into phone development, watch what it's doing, because as soon as it crosses through one, it means that the phone's actually redrawing an entire screen full. So it's doing, one is the amount of pixels on the screen. So if it's 0.5, it's only redrawn a portion of the screen. I've just managed to crank through one, but I'm actually only moving a tiny little thing around. So something's going wrong. I've done something wrong, or I haven't done something as well as I should, because the fill rate's going way too fast. So what I might do is I might actually go through and crack open the app.xaml here. Now, the app.xaml is the main app, is the sort of like the main boot spot for the application. It's where everything happens on startup, app.xaml.cs. And when you actually go and create an application, you get all these comments here. And you can see that frame rate counter is enabled by default. I haven't touched that. That's just happened. I can see there's a few more things to play with, just to remind you. The one I'm after is redraw regions. I want to see what is being redrawn on the screen to up that fill rate. So I'll pop that on. Now you see you've got some lovely colours. Basically, any region that's going to redraw will change colour. We'll keep doing it as I'm redrawing it. I'm like, okay. For whatever reason, you can see the whole screen's redrawing. All right, so what that means is that for some reason the application isn't... the phone tries to make all your objects render as efficiently as possible, but the way that I must have laid these guys out is that for whatever reason it couldn't do that. It didn't know how to make it more efficient, so it's gone back to default. What I can do, though, is I can actually go to my stack panel. This is the guy that's being moved around, and I can go, I'll tell you what, let's add a cache mode. Cache mode equals bitmap cache. Now, there's only one cache mode, bitmap cache. And what this does is once that object renders first time, it gets copied onto the graphics card and left alone until it gets re-rendered. There's an important lesson there. If you've got an object that updates a lot, it's actually an expensive process to take an update and put it down to the graphics card. So you only do this on objects that are fairly static, and you don't do it too high up, because if you've got to render a whole screen and copy a whole screen to the graphics card, that can be a slow process if you do it too much. So in this case, I'm doing it just on that little bit that I'm moving around. I don't do it on the whole page. So now if I go and actually run up my application, I've still got the redraw modes on, and you can see this time, it's only updating itself. Even when it runs underneath other objects, the video card is now doing the filling for me, and you can see I'm sticking underneath one on my fill rate. Just is enough. It can do one, no problems. So that's sort of bitmap caching and how you use cache visualization and things like that to go and move something around. To debug your application. Some of the hippies in the room might like to develop with cache with enable redraws on all the time. It's quite lovely, I think. What, no hippies? Hippie wins a phone. Still no hippies. Hippie don't need no phone. So just quickly on the frame rate counter stuff, I don't want to go too much into it because it's actually not terribly important, the rest of it, just to get started. But just quickly, Windows Phone has two threads, composition thread, which is basically a graphics card, and it's got a user interface thread, which is your code and an actual code that renders the UI and then passes it off to the graphics card. If your user interface thread's going up too high, then you should look at maybe running your code on another thread. Because the user interface thread is going to slow everything down. Text to memory usage, basically, there's a finite amount of memory in the phone for graphics, and if you exceed that, then it's going to start going really slow and crappy. So keep an eye on that, but I've never run into that. Surface counter, intermediate surface counter, basically, surfaces are the amount of shapes and objects you have on the screen, and the intermediate one is what happens after the phone's calculated how to display things on the screen and put some things on the graphics card. So the actual surface counter will usually go, the intermediate surface counter will be lower than your surface counter most of the time. And of course, screen fill rate. That is the easiest one to monitor. Yes, sir?
Does the texture memory usage change when you start using the bitmap cache?
Yes. Although, you know what, I haven't had to do a lot with it. Like, I have not run into issues with it in standard applications. I think it'd be more games and things like that, I think, would probably have the trouble. But I've never run into a problem with the other ones except for the user interface thread. So the accelerometer. Use the accelerometer class to read the data. Nice and easy to remember. And it updates very frequently. So make sure that you go ahead and buffer that update to the screen, like what I did with a timer or something. Use your own timer to read the data. Keep an eye on your frame rate counters, as I said. In app.xaml.cs is where you enable all the redraw regions. Yes, sir?
Is there only one actual accelerometer sensor in the phone, or are there multiple?
Don't know. I'd say to be centered, loaded or something. I don't know. I don't know how it works. Yeah, they've got digital gyroscopes usually. So I'm not entirely sure. The question was, do they have multiple accelerometers in them? I don't know how that works. All I know is that they're cool. And cache mode, bitmap cache, when you see something updating too much, but use it really sparingly. Just be careful with cache mode. It can really hurt performance if you put it too high up the tree. Yes?
Does accelerometer kick in if you were to, say, accidentally drop your phone?
Yeah, like any movement. As I said, it will detect a heartbeat if it's on the bed next to you. Like, it will detect breathing. Like, it's really, really sensitive. Amazingly so. Okay. What time have we got? Cool. These are 75-minute sessions, aren't they? Probably should have checked that before. Let's have a look at some mapping now. So mapping is one of my favourite bits. I think I've said that about every section right from the start. So I'm talking about all my favourites, all the old classics today. Okay, so mapping on the phone is actually really quite simple to do, and you can do some great stuff. There's two components. You've got map, and you've got the GPS sensor, or sorry, the geo-coordinate sensor. It's not a GPS sensor because geo-coordinates can be established by things other than just GPS, like Wi-Fi location and things like that. So basically what I want to do is I've got a page that I've already added in, so I'll just go and uncomment this piece of code to bring it in, but I haven't done any content in that page yet. And I've got this map class here. Okay. All right, I've got a map here. Map page, and I want to add a map to it. Now, I learnt long ago to not try and type things on stage live because that ends in very much pain. That is a map. Let's have a look at our wonderful map. USB key for anyone who can tell me where this map's going to show.
Redmond.
Sorry?
Redmond.
Redmond. Ah, so close. You were just so close. The correct answer is actually the middle of the Indian Ocean. I'm serious. The map defaults, when you give it no information, it defaults to the middle of the world, which is somewhere out in, maybe it's not the Indian, it's not the Pacific.
The Congo.
Yeah, somewhere down there. It's like...
It's zero,
that long. Yeah, it's just right in the middle of the planet, which is this lovely spot just here. But good try, though. Seattle. In fact, you got it half right because you'll see why in a minute.
You get half a USB.
Yeah, you get half a USB. Good one. I love it. Okay, so what we need to do now is we actually need to start tracking our location. So what I've got is a map view model. What I'm going to show here, I'm not going to really do too much MVVM stuff because there's been a lot of MVVM talks, model view view model. It's a style of actually coding up your application to be really efficient. And what I want to do demonstrate, though, is that the map control supports data binding for all its properties. Now, if you haven't done any data binding or anything like that, don't worry too much. You'll get into it really, really quickly. And just keep in mind that the map supports it. It also supports being directly accessed from code as well. But in this case, I'm going to use some data binding instead. Okay, so let's start pasting. Zip. All right. Okay, and we'll just make sure that we start geo-tracking before I forget. So this time we've actually got a geo-coordinate watcher. And this is like the accelerometer, except it's a geo-coordinate watcher. Once again, aptly named, except it doesn't just use GPS to find your location. And we've got a couple of properties here. We've got a couple of geo-coordinates, and that's what the geo-coordinate watcher gives you. I need to know the center location for the map. That's what the map will actually position itself around. And I need to know my location as well because, you know, you can scroll the map around and your location stays in the same spot. So they can be, they're two properties. They can be independent of each other. And just quickly, I'm going to go down here because there's something I keep forgetting every single run through. Here's some properties. Okay, so I'm taking those two properties that I created, those two variables that I created, and I'm going to expose them via properties. These properties are what I will bind to on the map.
With the geo-coordinate watcher, does it give you the most accurate reading all the time? So we've got GPS, it'll use
that. I'll get to that, actually. So the geo-coordinate watcher, when I create it, it's got two options, default and high accuracy. Default is very battery conscious, and it gives you a pretty good reading. In fact, whenever I've built apps, I haven't needed anything other than default. High actually gives you very, very pinpoint, very, very frequently updated information, which for certain applications you might need that. If it's like an application that you need to, you know, position a wall or something like that. But in just normal people walking around the place want to find a coffee shop, default is the way to go. And the watch has got a couple of events, status changed and position changed. So status changed, very important one that people often don't use. So we'll go status change first. Pop him in. Status changed. A couple of things can happen when you try and do G-coordinate. The user can have location services disabled, or you can be indoors. They can get no data. So there's a couple of things you need to handle when that watch starts up. And you know, it's up to you to route that to the user and tell them, hey, couldn't get a GPS location. The other thing that it gives you is if it's ready. So quite often what will happen is it will go no data, no data, ready. So, and then you can see that I'm updating those two properties that I added, location and center. I'm setting them to the same thing for this exercise, but you know, in a real app you might have those different, or the user might want to drag the map around themselves and things like that. Position changed. Okay, so watch your position changed. This is the other event. And this one basically will just fire whenever it feels like, whenever it gets a new position. Yes?
Is there a way to force GPS as opposed to
AGPS? The question is, can you force GPS as opposed to, what's the other one?
AGPS.
AGPS.
Yeah,
so the phone has some settings that allows you to choose which systems to use. It actually uses GPS and the Russian one, I can't remember it. And I think that you can change whether it uses Wi-Fi and cell towers and things like that as well. Yeah, right. I'm not sure if you can disable the cell tower one, but I know that you can get a few options in the settings. I haven't really gone through it much, but yeah, have a look in the settings on a phone. So I've got the location, I've got the center setting now when the GPS updates, and it's going to send it out to those properties. What I then need to do is go in and put onto the map some bindings. So my map was in my map view here. Firstly, I'm binding to the property center that I had on my class. So you can see that's the relationship there. And that center will then, whenever I update it, it's going to be pushed out into the map, and the map can redraw its location on the screen automatically. The second piece of code here that I'm going to put inside the map is this push pin. Now, maps can have a few things. You can have lists of items in there that actually act like a list box. So a list box stacks, you put a list of items into it and it stacks things down the screen or across the screen or whatever. A map items control will actually go and take a list, that same list of objects, but position them on the map where you tell them. So each object can have its latitude and longitude and we'll start putting dots around the map. Or, if you like, in this example, we're just adding a single push pin. Now, the single push pin just basically has got a little graphic inside it. You can see I've got a user control there, and it's called My Location View. The designer went away and I said to them, I need something that shows my location, and they just gave me a little circle thing, and I just put it inside there. And the push pin, as you can see, is bound to location. So, excuse me. And if location changes, if I start walking around, I can update the my location on the map. Cancel. I just want to go on. I think I might have just undone something. Okay. Now, it's in Seattle. Well done. Let's go to Gold Coast instead. So you can actually search for location just by clicking in that little bar there. That background agent will not go away. Okay, so let me just click that again. Go and search for Gold Coast. I'll just turn off the actual pushpin mode and let's go and find ourselves here. We are in Gore Beach and we are shivers. Right here. Okay, so push pin mode, we'll click there. And there goes the map. So you can see I can basically pretend that I'm the geo-coordinate watcher, but I can then go and click around the map in the emulator and have it update here. So I can move it slightly here and there. I can move it all around. I can also record data and play it back. So like if they're walking along a route, I can have it just slowly moving along. So there's all sorts of fun things you can do with that. And there's heaps of options, and you can tell it how much to fire and everything like that. Which is pretty cool. So we've got a map in. Let's expand upon that. Now, there's a really, really cool feature in Windows Phone called Bing Directions. And I don't know if you've seen it, but in the new version of Windows Phone 7.1, it's this really cool directions app that actually tracks you along and tells you what turns to make and reads it out to you. So you can actually use it while driving. So you can actually launch that from your application really, really easily. So let's just quickly bang one of those in. First of all, a little bit more MVVM, just for those of you in the room who are interested. So a command in MVVM is basically a way for me to have my view model here, and I can expose the ability for a button to click that command. So it's a way for to have a piece of UI then send into the view model, hey, I want something to run. So I've got a piece of code here. I've got onget directions. Okay, let's just pop him in. All right, so onget directions is basically it loads up a Bing map directions task, and it goes through and adds two addresses. First one is the start location, and it's actually just based on the location of me. So wherever I am currently, you know, using the GPS watcher, you'll notice that the end, though, is actually an address. It's not a location. So Bing is smart enough to be able to go away, use its geo thingy to figure out what I'm trying to talk about there, and take me to that location instead. Yes, it is definitely going up. In fact, we'll see that when we launch it. And then we need a get directions button. So we'll just put that in down the bottom here. And you'll notice on the button, remember how I said I had that command? Well, it's got... Have I already done that? Nope. That same command is then referenced from here. Instead of most of the time on buttons, you'd go click equals and then put a piece of code to handle it. When you're using MVVM, you actually use these commands because you don't actually have to tightly bind it all together and everything. So I don't want to explain MVVM, but just remember that commands in MVVM are good. And then you can go away and look it up yourself later. So let's run up again. I knew I buggered something up. I don't know what that is. I do know what that is. Yep, thank you. For some reason, it is 72 times. This is a fact. It is 72 times harder to debug something when you're giving a presentation. Okay, so we're back here, and we're roughly at the convention centre, and the address that I put in was actually to Waxy's pub, which is where the party was last night. So, that background agent. I'm going to get directions. Okay, so what it does, first of all, allow it to access your location, blah, blah, blah. This is pretty much the usually standard thing. Allow. Thank you. And caution. Because it's designed to use driving and things like that, you know, we want to make sure that it's giving some warnings and things, all the sorts of lawyery stuff. And then what it does is it goes up, finds the address, finds where I was based on my location, and then it actually gives me the Bing directions task. So I can actually just skip through here, and it'll, as I'm driving along, it'll do this, and it'll actually go ahead and read it all out and do all that sort of stuff. And it'll end up where I want to go. So that's Bing directions, and it's so simple to use. It's like a couple of lines of code. Yes, sir. Yes.
If that loses focus, does it need data again to refresh?
No, so once it's done, it'll just cache that. Unless the area of the map hasn't been drawn yet, you might not actually see the map if you've got no data.
But it'll still hold the directions?
It'll still do the voice? Yes, I think so. Yeah, you just might not see the map. Cool. Oh, and just a call out. With Bing Maps, you need a developer account to do that. So you just go and when you there's a Bing site that you can go and register that on, and do all that sort of stuff. Yes. So on default, it's not so bad, but it can be battery hungry. It's not too bad though. It's not as bad as what you might think. Yes.
If you wanted to develop mapping software, but instead of using Bing, you used Google, would Microsoft have an issue when you try to put it on the marketplace?
No. So the question was, can you use Google Maps instead of Bing Maps? It suggested you use Bing Maps because of the way it fits into the phone with data binding and everything like that, and the Bing tasks and everything. But there are controls available to use Google Maps if that's what you want. Yes? Okay, so the question is, do they charge for Bing Maps like they've started charging for Google Maps? I know that the rates are still quite high, but there is a point at which you'll hit you'll get billed. But it's like 100,000 geocodes or something like that a day. Don't quote me on that, but I know it's quite high for especially an app like this. The Bing site where you register and everything has all that information on it. Okay, so just a quick recap on maps, and then we'll finish up. So remember, you can data bind map values. It's the easiest way to do it once you get set up with NVVM and things like that. The geo-coordinate watcher is the go-to class for mapping, and you've got your position change and status change events that you should follow to do that. Remember that the map is an items control. It contains content. So when you actually start using Windows Phone and Silverlight a little bit more, you'll notice that there is a common theme. There's items controls. And an items control is a list box, grid views, things like that. They're all based on items control. And map is one of those. It's just that it chooses to show its items at geo-coordinates on itself. Bing Maps direction task to launch the directions. You don't have to have all the mapping stuff to do that. You can just get a location and start calling up that task. And just one little thing that I wanted to show just before we finish up. And this is something that it took me a while to figure out, and I was starting to... this is something I wish I had known a lot earlier, actually. Okay. So let's just stop. Set a breakpoint. Okay. What I'm doing here is I'm pretending that I've got a point somewhere else on the map. It's up near... It's sort of north of Brisbane somewhere. And I've just manually created a geo-coordinate, so you can do that based on... So you might manually create a geo-coordinate if you've got some data from a database. That's the object you want to wrap it up into. There's the background task. Okay. And I've got my location, and each geo-coordinate actually has this get distance to command on it that can go and just figure out how far away something is from something else, which is actually really difficult to do. So you can see there I'm 178 kilometres away from wherever that is. It's a really difficult piece of maths to actually do a geo-coordinate translation onto the Mercator Earth face thingy. All right, let me break it down for me. Basically, the Earth is not round. It's a sort of a bit wider at the poles, so it sort of flattens out a bit. And the only way to do an actual correct geo-coordinate measurement is to measure from the core of the Earth out to the two points and then run some kind of crazy maths crap along that surface. And so that does that for you. It's actually really, really handy in a mobile device because then you can actually load up, say, a list of coffee shops and you can go 5Ks, 20 metres, things like that, without having to send off to a service or write that maths yourself. You just call that one thing. So that's that. And... Question.
With the mapping, is the distance going to be metric?
Yes, it is. It is always in metres. It is always in metres. Yep. It's pretty awesome, hey? Yes?
Can you get the distance based on Bing Maps as well, based on the roads?
That's the directions task. You'll do that. So, no, it won't. It will just do as a crow flies, yeah. So, sorry, the question was, can you do it, like, following the roads and things? Yes? So can you specify a civic address as opposed to Latin long? You can, but you have to use the Bing geolocation service. It's actually a web service that's got web service metadata. So you can go into your project, right-click and go add web service reference, and it'll bring in all the geolocation stuff for you, and you can just start calling. It's really easy to do. And then you just click on the map, and off you go. Just quickly, we've got just a couple of minutes. Silverlight Control Toolkit exists. Thank you very much, the end. So just I just want to do a quick call out for the Silverlight Control Toolkit. It's upside down. Now, silverlight.coplex.com, it's got a heap of controls that you might use in your project. It's got some really cool drop-down lists. It's got pop-ups. It's got date pickers. It's got all sorts of wonderful things, and you can go and use it, and it's free. Like, there are stacks of them, and there's some really cool stuff in there. I was hoping to have time to show you guys, but I have just talked way too much. Questions? Yes, let's do questions. Just a reminder to fill in your evaluation just before you do that, because we're about to run over and get kicked out. So evaluate me. Yes.
You kept saying Explorer Meta is very sensitive.
Yes.
In your experience, is that possible for us to develop an application that detects vibration? So, for example, if I run an application on the cloud, so that if I put my phone next to a laptop or a keyboard, it detects someone else pressing the keyboard button, so that
yeah.
You can stop it?
Yeah, that should be possible. So the question was, could you, for example, is accelerometer sensitive enough to say put it on a laptop and then detect someone typing on that laptop? Yes, you obviously wouldn't be able to tell what they're typing, but you'd know that there's probably something going on. Up the back. Yes. Yeah, you absolutely have to use a phone if you're doing anything GPU intensive. The emulator will probably be faster than the phone. So, yes. Stuff runs better on the emulator, so just keep that in mind when you are developing to get that real device. Dave got loaner ones if you don't have one. Yes?
I know that the Windows 8 form beta is out. When you go to the website, it actually says you go to Windows 7 form as beta.
I'm not sure about the beta program. I thought it was closed. I'm not sure, Dave. I don't think it's open to the public yet. Yeah, you can register it for early access, but I don't know if it's that open. You know, it's like very early access at this stage. Phone 8. Yeah, Phone 8 will be the way to go with that. But yeah, it's not quite done yet. Oh, I'm not sure if that looks good. I'm not sure. I haven't done anything with the Phone 8 stuff yet, so I'm not the person to ask, sorry. Yes?
How much caching does a Bing Map Control do?
Not a lot. So the question was, how much does the Bing Map Control cache? It doesn't cache very much at all. I might just stop it there. We've got to finish up, and I don't want everyone to leave before I get clapped, so thank you very much. Don't leave just yet. We've got to do a phone.
We've got a phone.
So, Dave.
I'm going to ask a question.
Oh.
And this time, I think someone said I should have a time limit on answering it.
30 seconds. 10 seconds.
10 seconds. First person name, three attributes of a background agent.
No, they run every
short.
Yeah, good, all right, good.
Okay. That's probably getting to 10 seconds. Down the back.
One. Need three things.
Three things.
Yeah.
Down here.
Too late. Got to be reinitialized on startup.
Is that all good?
Yes.
Okay, well done. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, everybody.